From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made with a question. Are EVs, electric vehicles, too boring? In a recent op-ed in the New York Times, writer Ezra Dyer argues that EV enthusiasm seems to be cooling. Dyer is a columnist for Car and Driver magazine. He writes that while EV costs, the gaps in charging infrastructure and range limitations contribute to a decrease in sales of EVs, another issue is in play. Electric cars, he says, are not sexy enough. Too boring. You may be wondering what he means by this. Are drivers not excited by the look and feel of EVs? Are they really not sexy enough? Dyer says it's about the sensory experience. He writes, quote, driving, as we all knew it before the arrival of mass market electric cars a little more than a decade ago, involved familiar rituals that carved out a place in our collective psyche. You'd turn a key or push a button, feel a rumble of vibration through the seat and steering wheel, put a transmission in gear, and listen to the revs rise and fall with upshifts and downshifts. There might be smells, oil and gas or diesel, not pleasant but not entirely unpleasant either. For people who love cars, and even those who don't, this flood of visceral sensory feedback becomes associated with freedom and road trips, first dates and dashes to the grocery store. Electric cars make a clean break from all of that, end quote. That's hard for EVs. Hard to be an EV these days. If you haven't driven an EV, here's what Dyer says it's like, quote, climb into an electric car and there's often no key to turn or start button to push. It's just on. There's little noise except for the legally required pedestrian warning tone, which often sounds like Trent Reznor composing a creepy synth Nine Inch Nails tune somewhere behind the front bumper. Some of them have a one-pedal mode that doesn't even require touching the brake pedal most of the time. It's like driving a sensory deprivation chamber. For passengers, it's luxurious. For drivers, it's dull. End quote. Now, maybe you've got your own views on the experience of driving an EV. The question is if it's really affecting sales. Local dealers say the hurdles are maybe less about excitement and more about function. As for the numbers, according to NPR, in February, sales of EVs leveled off at around 9% after dipping down at the start of this year. Ford has cut production targets for its electric truck. Audi is slowing down its transition to EVs. Tesla sales are down. Its stock is down in recent months. And car rental company Hertz is selling some of its EV fleet, saying there is low customer demand for it. But EV automakers and sellers aren't giving up, of course. They told NPR they expect sales to pick up and even break records this year if things go well. And executives at J.D. Power say consumer interest is at the highest level they have seen, although still not a majority of the market. So what's going on? And what do those in the industry think the next phase of the EV market will look like? What will EV themselves look like? And can it be sexy enough for Ezra Dyer or you? Let's welcome our guests here. Brad McReavy's president of the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association. Welcome back. Thank you for being here, Brad.
Nice to see you again, Evan.
Welcome to Peter Montante, General Sales Manager for Bob Johnson Chevrolet. Welcome, Peter. First time on the program.
Thank you for having me.
I want to thank Peter, and I want to say Bob Johnson has been an underwriter for Connections. That is not why they got called here. They get called because they say yes when I call at the last minute. That's pretty much, no offense to you, Peter, but that's why you're
keep
company.
Going with the plug, please.
Yeah, right. So listeners know. There you go. Paul Berneman is here as well. Paul is a vice president of the Western New York chapter of the Electric Vehicle Association and an EV owner for how long now, Paul?
Well, since 2022.
22.
So it's only been 2 years.
Okay.
But we're on our third EV.
So what is wrong with you that you don't need a sexier car? Why do you accept this boring EV?
I think the EVs that we've had are the best cars we've ever owned. They're fun to drive. They're quiet. They're efficient. They get around, and we don't have to stop at gas stations. It's just a wonderful thing. So we're really thrilled. My wife and I are both really thrilled to have a couple of EVs that we just absolutely love.
I see the phone ringing already. And listeners, if you want to talk about EVs or your thoughts on not only the piece, but, you know, maybe if there's a barrier for you and how you get over that barrier or what you're driving, 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. For the vehicle, not to make this show all about me, nobody cares about me, but let me just give you maybe a somewhat typical customer experience, and then we can talk about where the market is for this. So in my experience in the last year, I've been thinking about changing what I drive to coach. I drove 35,000 miles last year. That's a lot of miles. Coaching two teams in the Southern Tier. It's a lot. And so, frankly, I would just get beyond personal values. I would love an EV just for not buying gas at 35,000 miles. Now, I've got a RAV4 hybrid. I get about 41, 42 miles to the gallon. That's good. I like the car, but I would have loved an EV. So I test drove a few over the winter. The first thing that hit me is the quality and the zip was so much more than when I test drove EVs a few years ago. So that seemed dramatically improved. The concern I had was, can you get to Elmira and back on one charge in the middle of a cold winter? If you've got a 22-degree January day and you got to go coach a practice and you got to go to Elmira and back from Rochester, can you get there? Brad is shaking his head. Here's what I found. I didn't feel like it was reliable enough with the range, because everybody here will tell me if I'm right on this, but the winter is a different deal than the warmer months. And the charging experience on the road, it's that one tank trip, so to speak, for an EV would have been a lot. So you're shaking your head and you think Elmira and back in the cold winter months, not yet.
I think Elmira's what, at least 100 miles.
Yeah, it's
90.
No, it's about 100 on the nose driving.
Okay,
it's about an hour 50
well,
one way.
Well, you know, I basically take the max range, and most EVs, once you know they talk about max range, you typically do not charge the vehicle, the battery, to 100%. 80% is normally the range where most people will recharge to. So take your range. Knock off probably 30 or 40% from a temperature standpoint to account for that weather change. And that's probably the range you're looking at for that vehicle. Now, there are vehicles that'll go 250, 300 miles of range. If you had a vehicle like that and your vehicle was fully charged, you could potentially make it there.
Even on a 22-degree day.
Again, 40
I need,
to
I need more than
40,
maybe, Brad.
Brad's
like, can't give it to you.
You're talking upwards of 100 models out there.
Okay. Peter is here to help.
I'm going to help you.
Okay.
We haven't seen you if you're shopping for a car, by the way. I haven't seen your face.
I said, this is not all about me. I don't mean
you
to
know
be...
where we're located, right? In Greece, across from the
you
Home Depot.
You were sick that day,
1271
Peter.
Westridge Road. That was a shameless plug, by the way. But anyways, the Silverado EV that I drove here today, which I want you gentlemen to check out after, that, by the way, does not look like an egg and does not have a humpback. It's a normal-looking pickup truck. Has a documented 450 miles of range.
450.
So I would have no problem with you making that trip and knowing that you're going to make it safely back
home.
Even
on the coldest day of the year.
Yeah. And you know what? What you talked about is range anxiety. And that's one of the things. I didn't bring a lot of facts and figures here. I brought more personal experience from the showroom floor.
Absolutely.
Customer perspectives.
Yeah.
And what people are asking. That's really the big one. An EV customer that's dead set on making an EV purchase, you know, based on all the research they do. And I never challenge those folks on product knowledge, by the way, because they kick my butt. I mean, it's got 200. No, Mr. Montante, it has 205 horsepower. I'm sorry, sir. You are correct. But anyways, yeah, that's one of the biggest concerns. And in the past, it was a little hard to answer that concern with the technology we had. You know, we had a Bolt with a max range of, you know, 250 miles if the stars aligned properly and it wasn't cold out. That car, I wouldn't recommend doing that in.
Yeah, you don't want to go 200 miles there and back, because you need 100% down to the last few miles.
But now think of the position we're in. We're actually in a position of strength, so it's a good time to be selling EVs. The article you've referenced to is complete FUD, F-U-D. I do have to say it's complete clickbait. And also, I hope the gentleman is making a lot of money on affiliate links there. I hope he's doing well with that article. My wife read it completely unbiased. You know what she told me?
Don't make us use the dump button, but go ahead. Just don't make us
edit. No.
Okay.
She told me that he was stretching to write an article that he had nothing else to write about. And in the article, he does mention, by the way, that he owns an EV.
So you think it's bunk?
Worse, but I can't say it.
Okay.
It's worse.
That's as far as Peter can go.
Yeah, what button is that?
No, we have the dump button if you curse. Don't do that here on your first time. Then we can't invite you back, Peter. But
and I want to come back.
I know, so far so good.
Yeah.
Paul Borneman, okay, Vice President of the Western New York Chapter of the Electric Vehicle Association. Before we get to the sexiness problem, Just the range issue. What are you seeing with range?
Right. So the vehicles all depend. The range depends on the vehicle, right, and how you drive. So keep in mind that the range that's quoted is always an average range of, assuming you're going half the time about 40 miles an hour and half the time about 55 miles an hour.
And that is not necessarily the speed I was driving.
That's not how I drive, and that's not how anybody I know drives. But that's how they quote the range, the EPA range on these cars.
40 to 55. So,
40 to 55
if you're at 65 plus, it's going to be smaller range.
And the faster you go, the more range you lose,
okay,
right? Or the more energy. And that's true in a gas car or an
electric
car, right?
Yep.
So the faster you go, the more you're towing, whatever, the more load you have in the car, the more you use. So I always tell people I can go 1,000 miles of range in my car if I go 40 miles an hour. But who's going to go 40 miles an hour the whole trip, right? So realistically, you know, a lot of these cars, you find the right mix to get to where you want to go and back again. And again, the charging stations are convenient now, more convenient than they've ever been.
Are they really?
They really are. And especially now in the Southern Tier, New York State, New York Power has an effort to put in Evolve New York power stations. And they're doing it in the Southern Tier, and they're doing it in all these hard-to-reach places because all the major players with chargers are putting them on the main highways. So they're Evolve New York is doing a fantastic job and a reliable job. They're actually maintaining them properly, and they're doing a fantastic job getting these power units out in the field. So you could stop in Bath or someplace along those lines and charge up on the way if that's on the way. I don't know. Without a map, I don't know where Elmira is in relation to that. But
it's past Bath.
Right. But on the way home, you could stop for 15 minutes in Bath and charge up and then go home.
Okay.
You know?
And 15 minutes is going to get
That's going to get you a couple hundred miles.
Okay.
In a lot of cars.
That's helpful.
You know?
And I hope that there will be an available spot on,
right,
you know, for charging. So,
right.
Again, I hope I'm not coming off it. I'm someone who wants to see this infrastructure improve. I'm someone who wants to see the range improve. I do not like spending gas money when I'm driving 30,000 miles a year plus.
Right.
That would be great not to. And I'm going to take phone calls in a second here. But Brad, just market generally, the piece talks about 8 to 9% of the market being EV sales. Is that roughly correct?
Nationally
correct. Do we know what we see locally?
In New York State, it's probably a little bit less than that. I think New York State, based upon the rebate process we have in place right now, probably running in the 7% range, I would guess.
Okay. And I had a conversation last night with a neighbor who owns an EV, and he is in the enthusiast category. Mm-hmm. But he said he thinks that the reason there's been maybe a little leveling off is because the deep enthusiasts have their EV. Now you got to penetrate a market of not necessarily some skeptics, some consumers who've never bought an EV, who maybe have concerns about the functionality of it. Do you generally think that diagnosis is correct?
Yeah. Look, I think I mentioned to you yesterday. You know, at 9% penetration, you're moving beyond the early adopter group, the people that are predisposed to this this method of transportation. You're moving into a more of a mass market situation. You're talking to people now that maybe aren't predisposed. EV wasn't something they were thinking on their shopping list. You have to educate them. You have to show them how this vehicle fits their needs, fits their driving needs. And it's not a situation where they might have a couple of cars in the garage and they just want to add an EV because they want to be able to have all the benefits of a vehicle that's environmentally friendly and do all those things. These are people that need this car to fit their lifestyle and their needs. That's a different type of person that you're selling to.
But it's not necessarily, or at least you seem skeptical of the article's premise, as Peter is, that the issue is these are just boring cars.
I do disagree with that. I've had hundreds, maybe even thousands of conversations with people about EVs over the years. That comment has maybe come up, I can count it on my hand, one hand. I mean, a real car enthusiast, someone who's into fixing their own car and really into the performance aspect of it and so forth, someone who's really a traditional car person, that could be an issue for them. That's so far down on the list of what may be the challenges facing EVs. So I'm not going to say there aren't people out there like that, Evan, but I think there are in a very, very small number of people.
Well, we know how Peter and his wife feel about that part of the argument. What would be holding people back when you talk to customers then?
Once again, the range anxiety is the big topic of conversation.
That's number one.
But here's the thing. First of all, I want to touch on the fact that EVs are here to stay. A lot of manufacturers have a target of 2035 to 2040 by the time they stop selling gas-powered or they start producing gas-powered cars. So those are pretty aggressive targets. So you know where there's billions of dollars invested in this right now. The EVs are going nowhere. So I guess the point is a couple of things to consider, right? Under the NACS, which is the North American Charging Standard, it's an effort to standardize uniform charging. That means that every manufacturer may have their own proprietary plug. So what this is going to do is it's going to standardize it to the point where now, for example, General Motors just recently signed an agreement with Tesla. So we'll be able to use Tesla's ecosystem and chargers to charge our cars, making more availability. And then there's a list of other ones as well. They just finalized agreements with Blink Charging, ChargePoint, EV Connect, EV Go, Flow, and also Green Lots. And those are basically the main EV charging suppliers. So at this point, I feel that, you know, a lot of this talk is things that we were dealing with maybe 2 or 3 years ago, right? This article brought me back to then, by the way. But the reality yeah. now is that, you know, when you're talking to a customer about a vehicle that has a 450-mile range, and by the way, Mr. and Mrs. Customer, don't worry about losing... it brings range anxiety. Can I tell a quick story?
Yeah.
So you want to know what range anxiety is? I had a beater car when I was going to college. It was a two-door Nissan Sentra. It was supposed to be white, but it looked more like a rust color at that point. I had to literally put together two wire hangers, attach one to the door handle, and the other one kind of loop it outside through a crack in the window, right? And whenever I had to open the car from the outside, I would have to literally just open it that way because the car handle wouldn't work on that. But the other big issue it had was the fuel gauge was broken.
Oh,
so when you're in college and you're broke and you're trying to put gas in your car at $5 at a time, that's range anxiety.
Yeah.
I mean, my poor wife, you know, because I kept this car for a while after college. She got the pleasure of dating me to ride in it. Just shows you how much she loves me to stay with me at that point.
She stays with you through that car.
We ran
out of love.
We ran out of gas a couple times. That's range anxiety. But what I was going to say is, like the Silverado I have downstairs, right? And we have the new EV Blazer in our showroom. You really have to come and check those vehicles out because these are not your traditional 4 or 5 years ago looking EVs. These are like EV Blazer, like a real crossover SUV type of Blazer.
You're saying,
right?
For my next test drive.
I'm trying to influence you to come. So anyways, you're my target right now. But anyways, so what I was going to say is that these new Ultium batteries that GM has out, do you know how much range you can get in 10 hours of charging with a level 3 charger?
How much?
100 miles. So that the range anxiety is no longer something that we have to deal with. Now we deal with more with traditional styling. As a customer comes in, does this vehicle suit your everyday needs? And now the vehicle can be your primary driver.
I'm with you. And I'm sure we'll get to, later this hour, we'll get to more trips. And my driving needs are a little bit different than the average customer. Most people aren't going 30 to 35K. I get it. And I hope this is temporary for my life. And as a Little League coach, it is. But I think it's also trips. And we'll get to that too. I want to get Sandy, Tim on the phone, Andrew, Rich. I want to get all of you. I do just want to ask Paul, you know, just on the visceral side,
yeah.
When I test drove this winter, I took like a few extra spins around the block that I probably wasn't supposed to because I was enjoying, I'm not going to lie, I was enjoying putting the pedal down and feeling the power because there was more than I expected.
The performance is amazing.
It was much improved, yeah. And that gave me much more confidence in it,
right.
Just viscerally. So if you do want to go back to the article's points about the visceral feeling of driving, it wasn't lacking for me. It just wasn't a fit fully yet for what I'm doing. I do think that that's come a long way.
They have great performance, great start off the light, you know, getting up to speed, passing on the highway, all of that. And also good handling, too, on the roads because they're low center of gravity. They're not going to tip over. They're really, really very powerful vehicles that have excellent handling and excellent road experience.
Which vehicle do you have?
So we've got a Tesla Model Y and a Mustang Mach-E. So we've got two right now. So my wife's got one, I've got the other. So the Tesla's got all the benefits of the Tesla. So it's basically people talk about it being a computer on wheels. It is a very different, it's a very technology experience compared to an auto experience. So when I've driven Lexuses or BMWs in the past, you know, the Tesla's got a lot of the same sport feel, but it doesn't have, but it's very much a technology. There's, I'm in the technology space normally, my day job, and the way the software in the Tesla works, the way it integrates and changes my driving experience, it cuts out a lot of.
I kind of don't want that. I just want a car.
Right, right. So that's why you. That's why
I don't want a computer.
The good news is that's why there's other cars out there on the market.
Fair.
You drive. You pick up a Volkswagen ID.4, and there's almost no acceleration. It drives like a regular car. People like it. People who like that car have a tendency to be people that are not car people. They just want to get from point A to point B, and that's all they want to do, because they don't want any of that new fancy stuff. But it's also not a very fun car. I mean, we test drove it. My wife test drove the ID.4, and we didn't like it. We were like, we walked away saying, wow, that's really kind of a unfortunate use of an EV, because it doesn't have the acceleration. It doesn't have the handling. It's a good car.
But
it's
you
a
knew
good,
you
solid
could find
car.
That stuff in another
We could
EV.
Find it in yeah. another car. Yeah. Right. So okay. you have to pick the right vehicle for you. I can't wait to drive his Silverado, by the way. It is amazing. I had one on order back a while ago, and it got a little pricey for me, because the one I wanted was a little over $100,000.
A little over.
But a little bit. But if you look at the gas prices, the cost of the gas equivalent cars in the Silverado line, they're the same price. A lot of them are exactly the same price.
So let me go ahead and start grabbing a few of your phone calls here, because there's a lot of people want to weigh in. Sandy in Penfield first up. Hello, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hey, Evan. How you guys doing so far? You're doing a very nice job on this fascinating, convoluted issue.
Yeah, thanks. So I take it you're an EV driver?
Actually, my best friend has one. He loves it. He's got one of those Bolts. He's had it for about 5 years. Loves it. And there's so much really, really great information about EV. As you guys know, you guys are the experts. But I think one of the biggest myths, which we've already touched upon, is that whole fascinating concept of range anxiety. You know, the average driver drives, 30, 40 miles a day? You're an exception. You're driving all over the place, right? But most guys don't go that far.
Right.
So for an EV, especially now with, 300 to 400 miles, I don't see the problem. It seems like the charging systems are improving dramatically. So I think there's been a lot of bad press recently, and I just think it's unfortunate, because I think it clearly is the wave of the future.
Well, I appreciate that. And to the point that Sandy's making about improvement, here are some of the metrics there. I mean, in a moment, I'll just ask Brad if you think we still have enough infrastructure, if we still have a long way to go there. But in terms of improving the gap between from EVs to gas-powered vehicles, NPR reporting that the average EV used to sell for more than $66,000, now down to about $50,700. That's an average of the EV market. Anyway, it's significantly down and much closer, only a couple thousand dollars difference between an average EV and an average gas-powered car. Is that roughly correct as you know it, Brad, or you think the gap's still bigger?
Net of federal rebate or?
Oh, okay, good question. I don't know the answer.
Would make a big difference.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, the numbers that I've read, and I didn't look it up today, but the numbers were a little bigger, a little more of a gap than
More of a gap.
There's a lot of rebate money out there.
Although one of the frustrating aspects that I've talked to some buyers about the rebate market is there were pretty tight rules about, as we talked about last time, made in America and what the rules were.
Right.
And the vehicle that I test drove this winter was not eligible for any rebate because it didn't meet that standard.
Correct.
So that made it a little bit more out of reach.
Yeah, the federal rebate has gotten quite a bit more complicated than it used to be. And prior to a few years ago, before the Inflation Reduction Act, if you bought an EV or a plug-in hybrid, you got the rebate, but you had to do it as a credit to your federal tax return.
Now I need a PhD to figure out if I'm getting a rebate,
It's a little more
Brad.
Complicated. A little more complicated. It has a lot of elements to where the vehicle battery is built, where the minerals are gathered. Also, it has income limitations. So now a buyer has max income limitations to be eligible for the rebate. The good news is the government has now allowed for the rebate to be transferred to a dealer to be used as a rebate on the hood of the car. So you no longer have to wait until the subsequent year to file it on your tax return and use it
That's
as a credit.
Helpful.
It's very helpful. The
That's
National
helpful.
Auto Dealers Association worked very hard to get that transferability into the EV program.
That's great.
And so now it can be given to the customer right at the time of sale. It's a very good program.
Yeah, that's great. Because my guess is you all prefer simplicity in dealing with these questions.
We do, and we like to give the consumer the immediate benefit of the purchase.
Yeah, Peter, when people are asking about whether a vehicle qualifies, is that a point of frustration or concern?
No, not at all. A lot of our customers that come in and want the incentive applied to a vehicle, and by the way, it also applies to used vehicles. Mm-hmm. Transaction price, the asking price has to be under 25,000 miles. And like Brad is saying, there's some other things to consider there too, to make sure the car qualifies. But when we advertise these vehicles, number one, we do that part of the due diligence for the customer. So if we advertise a car online with the federal tax incentive attached to it, or for that matter, the New York State incentive attached to it, we make sure that that car qualifies for that incentive. So we do that part of the due diligence. The only part that the customer really has to be concerned about is, once again, if they go to a great resource, by the way, is irs.gov, and they have a whole section in there about you know, what the qualifications are income-wise. But once again, I always recommend to folks, and never give them definitive advice, I always recommend that they go see their tax accountant or tax attorney or somebody that's familiar with their tax situation. That's the best thing to do. But always do your due diligence. But there is a lot of money. I'd be interested to know. I know on the surface it would seem that EVs cost more based on MSRP. I'm not sure that would boil down to the same result if we looked at transaction prices. Because when you look at the fact that you can apply in New York State $7,500 to a new vehicle and $2,000 on top of it from the state, I think almost a $10,000 discount would make that pretty compelling. And that Silverado I have downstairs, at that point, would be a real value proposition. And I didn't bring any facts or figures, but that vehicle down there, 600 foot-pounds of torque, 515 horsepower, right? It's a rocket ship. And I would challenge anybody to find something with those specs in a gas engine configuration that wouldn't cost that much, if not more.
Do you want to challenge part of that?
I would want to be careful about the eligibility for the rebate. So in New York State, the rebate program is up to $2,000. If you go on the website and look at the number of vehicles that actually qualify for more than $500, because New York's rebate program at $42,000 MSRP, $500. When you look at the number of eligible vehicles, it's less than 10 that qualify for $1,000 or more dollars in rebate money. The average rebate, I've tracked this for years, the average rebate in New York runs about $700 to $750. That's the average. The majority of the rebates are $500. There's a handful of vehicles that qualify for $1,000 or $2,000. When you mash it all together, the average rebate's about $750.
Peter?
Good point, Brad. Thank you. Also, the state variant of the site that you should go to get more information on it is NYSERDA, NYSERDA, for information that Brad is talking about. Up until now, we just got the EV Silverado in as well as the Blazer EV in, and you have to come check those out. But having said that, up until now, we haven't had to worry about a vehicle that had a price more than that, because we were basically selling Bolts, both EVs and both EUVs, mm-hmm. which both fell well below that yeah. parameter.
All right, before I get back to the phones, let me just ask Paul. Part of Sandy's point is the improvement in everything that has to do with the functionality, which means range, which means finding. So when you are traveling, if you are going out beyond a typical trip,
right.
Are you encountering any trouble finding where you need to charge up?
No. So
really never anymore?
No, we're not really, because first of all, the cars have the navigation built in. They already know where all the chargers are.
Not just the Tesla.
Okay. Even the Mach-E. And if not, then there's an app on your phone that you can use to find those and help you route plan.
And they've been reliable.
They've been very reliable, okay. And they get better and better every year. There's also I'd also encourage Sandy to go to the Penfield, if I could plug it, the Penfield EV show that's going up on Arbor Day on April 20th. If he goes to penfieldevshow.org, he can check out a lot of car dealers and a lot of individual drivers. There's going to be over 41 different EVs there that he could check out and see what it's going to be like. So somebody might let you drive their car. I'll be showing my Tesla at that show. And then there's two more in Buffalo that same week, the following week rather, that I'll be bringing the Mach-E to probably. So there's a lot of EV shows that enthusiasts bring their cars to, so people can see what they're like, as well as dealers.
A listener says, that's all well and good, but what about any place well north of the thruway? Hockey moms desperately want an EV pickup truck, but are terrified of being stuck in Watertown.
Yeah, definitely get the Silverado. I would say definitely get the Silverado. There was just a thing on YouTube. I'd recommend Out of Spec YouTube's channel. They just did a race with four different EV pickup trucks across the country. They went from Florida to California in 2 days. In about 40 hours, and they, you know, they've got the whole experience there, stopping and charging. And the Silverado was a beast with the big battery. That's a great truck. And almost anybody can get there. We've got a place up in Killington that we take our EVs to, and there's definitely more and more EV charging stations up in the North Country of New York and Vermont and Maine now than there ever have been. And it's not really a big deal to get there and back. So. They do have to charge. You know, you might have to charge, but it's really just a stop for 15, 20 minutes, maybe half an hour, and charge up your vehicle and move on to the next place.
All right. Paul is very, very confident here. Megan Mack, tell me in my ear who's on four. I've lost everything here. So tell me who's on four, if you could. And we'll get back to your calls as we talk about EVs here. Hey, Tim. Let's go to Tim in Rochester next. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Oh, thank you, Evan. I just wanted to comment that my wife has a Hyundai Kona that she's been leasing for the past 3 years. She just drives it back and forth to work every day, and we have solar panels on the house, so we charge it from our house, so she doesn't pay anything for gas. But in the summertime, we like to take it on trips, and it takes a little bit of planning, but we've been able to take the Kona to Boston. We've been able to drive to Montreal last summer. We've driven to Pittsburgh a couple of times. And what we found is, as your guest said, it's very easy to find chargers. There are apps all over the place. One of the ones that we use is called Charge America. And it'll show us EV chargers in all these little podunk places, bigger places. Typically when we've gone to like Pittsburgh, we can go to Erie before we start getting dangerously low on charge. There's a Walmart Plaza there. There's half a dozen charging stations. We plug in and then we go to lunch. We come back, finish lunch, and then drive to Pittsburgh, and then the hotel will pick one that has a charging station. So it really isn't that far out of the way. It does take a little longer than just filling up with gas, but I just wanted to mention that it can be done and it's not really that inconvenient.
Okay, I think that's part of what Paul has been arguing. Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, there certainly are areas that there are spots that need more chargers, and those are typically in the Midwest. But around here, you know, the Southern Tier has gotten a lot better. It's a lot more better chargers. And again, Evolve New York has done a fantastic job. Government actually working for us and helping us, which has been fantastic. So I think that's been a big plus for New York. But no matter where you go, the software is really good. It tells you where the chargers are. It tells you whether they're busy or not. It tells you whether they're working or not. And things are getting more and more reliable. It's been over the last 2 years, it's gotten a lot better.
Well, I mean, Paul is certainly a knowledgeable enthusiast, and I appreciate that, Tim. Brad, do you think that we are going to see a point where EVs, let me put this a different way. I can't predict the future, and Peter's point about where we're going with, you know, with car legislation and the rules and the interest of the market, I don't want to talk 10, 20 years in the future. In the next five, are we going to see EVs cross 10%? Could it get to 20%? What would it take to get there?
Oh, I think it'll definitely go north of 10% in New York State, you're talking about.
Sure.
Yeah, so if we're at 7% today, I don't think there's any doubt it'll go above 10%. Could it get to 20%? Possibly. You know, New York State has put a lot into this. You know, Paul's comment about the infrastructure situation, yes, it's better today, but frankly, it's not as good as it's supposed to be. Is I think the way I would frame it. NYPA, which is the organization that's in charge of the installations, when the comptroller of New York State did an audit of the installations back in 2019, they had been allocated $15 or $20 million to install chargers. They had installed zero. As of 2021, I think they had installed 23 charging stations with, you know, several chargers at each location. So the point is that they're behind in the development of the infrastructure. Can they get better? Absolutely. Will they get better? I think absolutely as well. I think they'll continue to progress because New York is very committed to this. But it's not at the level that it was supposed to be, and it's not at the level probably that is going to create a high degree of confidence in consumers right now.
Well, let's just have a little fun. What's the first year we're going to see EVs cross 50% of sales, Brad?
50%. Wow, you're really going out there.
Remember, we're at 6-8% now.
I'm going to give you some numbers, okay? New York State, as Paul mentioned, New York State already has legislation on the books that says as of 2035,
yep,
ICE vehicles can no longer be sold in this state.
So no more gas-powered cars being sold.
Cannot be sold new, right, at that point in time. So we're sitting at 7% today, 7 or 8% today. The leader in this race is California. They're sitting at about 27%.
27 today, okay.
Yeah. All the forecast models for the entire country, if you add it all up together, they're saying by 2040, we'll be at about 70% penetration. That's a pretty impressive number. You know, quite frankly, I mean, for 15 years down the road to be at 70%. So do I think New York will be at 50%? You know, I think that's a bit of a stretch. But, you know, with all the resources they're going into it, and also I think there's a bit of a hockey stick effect to this. It's progressing very slowly. It's growing, but rather slowly. But then you're going to see that very aggressive climb in EV adoption once the infrastructure is fully developed or much more developed than it is today, once the battery technology improves so that instead of only, well, it's not the only one, but getting 450-mile range becomes common amongst EVs. That becomes a common situation. When the battery technology gets to the point where you can recharge a battery in 10 minutes, you know, instead of 40 or 45 minutes, those types of developments are going to make a huge impact on the adoption process. So by 2035, can you get to 50%? Possibly. Yeah. It'd be a pretty aggressive goal.
Okay. Peter? Peter Montante, by the way, is general sales manager for Bob Johnson Chevrolet.
1271 West Ridge Road.
He came
Greece,
prepared.
Across from the Home Depot. Shameless plug number two. So well said, Brad. You know, the manufacturers have, you know, pressures on them at the state level, but also the federal level with these vanilla requirements that they're facing with different timelines from the federal government. So there's a lot of pressure on the manufacturers. The billions of dollars in investment is not chance. It's well calculated. You know, is EV sales for certain manufacturers right now a losing proposition? Absolutely. But it's an investment in what they have to accomplish with these different timeframes. So, could these become moving targets? I don't know. Things are subject to change. You know, can these be moved up 10 years, 20 years? I don't have a crystal ball, but at this point, you know, it's based on where we are right now. I can see why Brad's concern is, you know, we have a little bit of a uphill to go, but yeah, we'll see where it goes. But the technology, the new technology coming out with these vehicles is very promising. Even the Blazer EV has a 324-mile range. You know, we have the Equinox EV right on the corner, similar range. So things are definitely improving. I could see in 5 years, like Brad was pointing to, where, you know, most of the cars have 450 miles of range, 500 miles of range. We're not at that point yet, but the first models that are at that point are here. So that's encouraging.
Okay, Paul?
Yep. No, I agree. As the battery technology improves, as the cars get more efficient, as, you know, the incentives to deploy high-speed chargers are there, as the incentive to deploy chargers at home or where you work is there. Those are the things that are going to make a big difference. Anywhere the car is parked for a long period of time is a good place to charge. So ideally, it doesn't have to be always on the road, doesn't have to be on the highway, but the highway chargers make it possible to do these long trips and accomplish long-distance travel. So it's important that we have a balance of all those things, and I agree 100% with what Brad was saying. The technology has to improve, and we're starting to get there. We're starting to see more good news about that. And the other thing that's going to have to happen is that the prices have to get normalized for people. So we're seeing that with the used car market right now. You see that, you know, people are frustrated who buy an expensive car, no matter what it is, whether it's a gas car or an EV, and the car is not worth what it was when they bought it. Well, it's, you know, it depreciates, right? So cars do that. That happens. And they depreciate a lot if the car is overpriced to start with. So you have a bigger, you know, you're more likely to pay less for a used car that's that was more expensive. So a lot of the used cars now are very, very affordable. You can buy cars in the $20,000 range that are used that don't have a lot of miles on them that are good for another 400,000 miles probably and will work fine for you. So there's a lot of neat stuff out there.
Brad?
Yeah, and I think Peter, his point about the range, the more we can develop the range. But, the flip side to that is there's a direct today, there's a direct correlation between range and cost. The bigger the range, generally, the higher the cost. So we also have to find affordability for consumers. The average consumer cannot buy a $75,000 vehicle. Can't buy that. When they survey consumers, they want to see models under 40 grand. You need to see models under 30 grand to meet the mass consumer market. If you want to get that level of adoption, you need to be in those price point areas so the average consumer can afford an EV. And when you bring that price point down, to be able to increase range and at the same time bring that price point down, that'll be a real challenge for the manufacturers in the industry.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. Rich in Rochester next. Hello, Rich.
Hey, Evan, how you doing?
Good, sir.
The one thing I think about a lot on these is besides the range, and I travel a lot. I go back and forth to Toronto. The charging, I mean, we talk about, just sit there for 10 or 15 minutes, but when you're someone like me, I don't want to go into a place and have to sit there for 20 minutes. Another thing is, of course, is the dearth of charging. You may have charging stations, but everybody may be taking up the spot. And also, when the gentleman, I think it's the Silverado that he's using, we have to also, how about the grid? As we get these, especially these trucks, that's, 400 amp charging if you're going to put it at your house. So there's that cost and all these things that we have to, these challenges that are going to face us. If we only have 9% of our cars on these that are electric, can you imagine when we go to 50, what we're going to have to do with building up our grid and putting in these circuits when people are going to want them at home? This is going to be a huge challenge for us. So these are a lot of the other things that have to be looked at.
Okay, Brad McAreevy?
Yeah, so I just read an article today about this, about the grid. And, interesting. So right now, nationally, the number of EVs that are currently in use draw about 0.2% of the grid. 0.2%. And there's, a couple of million EVs on the road.
Right.
If there were to be a mass adoption, and I think mass was defined as upwards of 50% adoption,
sure,
it would have the grid be a utilization of roughly 11% of the total grid. That's the entire amount of electricity produced in the entire country for every need of electricity in your house and everything else that's powered by electricity. The grid today, as it stands right now, if there was a mass adoption, would struggle significantly to try to produce that level of power.
So we've got a goal to set here, right? Because that's got to change.
Yeah, the utility situation, and everybody knows this. I mean, everybody, the state government, federal government, everybody knows the utility situation. And if you're a dealership right now and you're trying to install fast chargers in your dealership, in some areas of Rochester, you can do that. In other areas of Rochester, you can't because the grid in that particular area won't support that level of power being fed to a charging unit. But the grid and the utility situation is part of the equation. It's all part of the scenario.
And has to get sorted out before we
absolutely
get to mass adoption. Okay.
That's absolutely right.
Yeah, great call, Rich. Thank you very much. Andrew next in Irondequoit. Hi, Andrew. Go ahead.
Hey, great show, you guys. Hey, I was just along those lines of the grid. I don't think all these cars are going to be able to be powered by solar farms in Livingston County. So what do you guys think of nuclear power? And are you talking to the powers that be and out there about nuclear power in the future? Because it is, they can make small and safe nuclear power plants.
Just in general, on the question of energy in the future?
That's how do you power all this electric world? They want to take away your gas stove. They want you to drive an electric vehicle. They want you to take away your gas heating for your house. How are we going to do all this electrical stuff if we have solar farms in Livingston County? I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Andrew, I appreciate the call. Peter wants to jump in. I'll just say, smarter people than me who study energy, there's a debate about nuclear's place, and there's not a monolithic view on this. There's even a debate among real sort of hard energy action folks on the political left about nuclear. So I couldn't tell you any monolithic view on this, Andrew, but I hear that your concern is it's going to have to be one of the components. Peter, you want to jump in?
Yeah, that was a great question, by the way. And we have to consider in this whole conversation, the thing we haven't talked about really is alternative ways to create batteries. Currently, we're not creating the most efficient batteries in the world, lithium. Mining, it's a big issue. And so there's other technologies being developed. I haven't read too much about nuclear, but I can tell you that there's in the works right now in experimental phases, they're producing batteries using elements like sulfur, aluminum, and not only do these batteries charge faster and generate less heat, because heat is a big issue when you're trying to charge something quickly. You have a lot of heat being generated. So these other elements that they're working with don't have that issue. Also, the promising part is that they are abundantly available, especially sulfur, salt. And the exciting part about that, too, is that you, in initial testing, they don't see the amount of degradation due to, the weather changing outside. So if it gets cold outside, they're not seeing the same degradation in range that they are now with their current technology. So that's another thing to consider. Understand that manufacturers right now, like GM and Tesla and all these other ones we've been talking about, they're not working on the next generation car right now. They're working on four generations from now. So that's what you have to keep in mind. And that's what I've learned by visiting these different manufacturing plants is they're not working on next year or the next model in 2 years. They're working on the model that's going to come out, in 10, 12, 15 years possibly. So there's some good things coming around that's going to solve a lot of these challenges we're talking about. And to Brad's point, with their current technology we have, it's hard to find a way there.
Let me squeeze in two things from Joel. Joel points out some of lithium and battery sources are coming on the backs of, in Joel's words, native peoples in this country. And we have covered that on this program. Before anybody feels perfectly great about their EV, it's worth knowing where our batteries are coming from and where the materials are coming from. And that is an ongoing conversation about how to do lithium better, where the sourcing, if it's going to come in this country, what that means and who's involved. But I think Joel is raising fair points that I would encourage listeners to read on their own about. He's also asking, when's China going to produce some EVs? Is China producing any EVs? Brad?
Oh my. China right now, BYD, a Chinese-based EV company, is now the number one selling EV company in the world. They have actually surpassed
Tesla. Is that right?
They are.
Oh.
And they've got a couple
BYD?
Of
BYD?
BYD.
BYD.
Is the largest EV seller in the world right now. China is the biggest car market in the world, so when you build cars in China, you're feeding the largest car market in the world. But BYD is the number one selling EV car maker in the world. They have several other companies that are right behind them. NIO is a very significant player in the EV market. So China is doing their thing. The thing that's concerning is China also, when we get back to this mineral thing, China controls about 70% of the lithium supply in the world. They don't necessarily have 70% in their country, but they control it through various ways.
How are the labor standards in those mines?
Not as good. Okay, not as good. And they control the mining areas that go on in some of these other countries that we're talking about. So, to get to your point, the ultimate goal, from a climate standpoint, the ultimate goal is to be able to power the grid through renewable energy. That's the ultimate goal. When and if we're able to get there at some point, that's yet to be seen. Today, we power the grid largely, not entirely, through fossil fuels, which that's the naysayer argument. If you're driving an EV, your car is good, but how you charge your car and the fossil fuels that are used to power the grid, there's obviously carbon issues there. But the more we can move toward renewable energies that are clean, renewable energies, obviously you're achieving the ultimate goal.
I'm going to squeeze in Rhonda's last question. Rhonda wants to know, says, if I got an electric car, my electrician wants to charge $2,000 to upgrade my outdoor outlet. Other EVs, were, she's heard $3,000 to $3,500 to upgrade an outlet. Real briefly here, let me just ask, Paul Borneman is the vice president of the Western New York chapter of the Electric Vehicle Association. What did you pay to upgrade your outlet?
So to put the power outlet in the garage to support an EV charger was about $1,000. About $1,000. Okay. So a lot depends on the distance of where you're running the cable to. Mm-hmm. So all it is them running a cable and connecting it up and, you know, and putting in breakers to support it. So it's really nothing.
Is it complicated?
It's not complicated at all, but you want to have a real electrician, a certified electrician doing it. You don't want to just do it. This is not a do-it-yourself job.
Is it a dig out and blow up your garage situation?
Well, it depends on the garage, right? If the garage is detached, if it's far away. So chances are these people with these higher numbers have a detached garage, or it's on the opposite side of the house, or they have a huge house. So, you know, everybody has a different situation. You know, right now, some of the towns are adopting code that say anytime you do any kind of remodeling on the house or renovation work in your house, you have to put the conduit in, at least, if not the wires, for EV charging in your garage.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah,
real
look,
quick,
Evan, we as the association, we work with a couple of EV installers. Mm-hmm. We provide that benefit to our members. If they need help with an installation, we have companies that we have vetted and we work with. Paul's absolutely right on. The cost of an installation is completely dependent upon what that person's house looks like. And the $2,000 range, I'm assuming, I think would include the charging unit itself.
Okay.
The installation part of it is part of it, and the unit itself is part of it. There's also permitting costs that go on in the towns that you live in. The city or the town that you're working with probably is getting a little piece of that as well.
See, I knew we were going to go so far afield of the whole EVs are not sexy enough thing. Mm-hmm. There's a lot better things to talk about with EVs, and that's what our guest did this hour. Brad McReevy, president of the Rochester Automobile Dealers Association. You are generous with your time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Peter Montante, general sales manager for Bob Johnson Chevrolet. Hey, where are you located?
1271 West Ridge Road in Greece, across from the Home Depot. And if you can't make it out, visit us at bobjohnsonchevy.com. If you have any questions for me directly, pmontante, P-M-O-N-T-A-N-T-E, at bobjohnsonchevy.com.
He got it. Hey, Paul Borneman, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you. I hope all your guests come to PenfieldEVShow.org and check out the
PenfieldEVShow.org. Thanks, everybody.
Thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep, bye-bye.